Hello and welcome to Relevant Tones. I'm your host today, Austin Williams. We are joined by a lovely composer of many varieties, Jackson Greenberg, this week. Jackson Greenberg is a full-time film composer based in LA, but also is a classically trained concert composer as well. Jackson has recently released a couple of projects under his own volition this past October, and I thought it'd be cool to showcase this particular composer. I think we often maybe polarize film composers to kind of be doing that, and you know, concert composers to be doing their own thing, and it's really cool to see individuals hybridizing this field. And kind of taking from both ends. So the first piece we heard that we just came off of is The Latter Years B, which is off of that album that he has released. Jackson goes into details about the process of that album and the process of a large form piece that he has had performed multiple times with a string quintet. So without further explanation, let's get into the interview so Jackson can explain it best himself. Why don't we start with your idea? Because I like that a lot, what you kind of brought up more specifically about the score itself and the process in which you recorded your piece Apartments and what that was like. So yeah, go for it if you wanna chat about that whole process.
Yeah, I'm really proud of that piece. I'm also, in retrospect, really proud of the process. I was asked to do a commission for Sybarite 5, which is this string quintet based in New York City.
Sure.
I met Lewis Levitt, their bass player, through a friend, and we had some good conversations. And, you know, my background, I studied composition at Princeton University, and I come from a pretty like concert music background before I started, you know, doing mostly film and TV work. And so it's been exciting for me getting back into the concert world.
Sure.
And Lewis was like, you know, didn't have any direction, didn't have any ideas. It was just, we had some conversations about length of the piece, and I listened to a lot of their music and tried to get a sense of what their ethos was as an ensemble. And then I really struggled for a long time. You know, I think when you are in film and TV world, you're not writing many things pen to paper. You're experimenting a lot with electronics. You're sampling different musicians. And, you know, sometimes you'll write themes or counter melodies or chord changes pen to paper. And then I kind of go away from that a little bit. So yeah. I was struggling for a long time, just like sitting in front of the blank page, like months and months and months, getting closer and closer to the deadline of this piece. And it was during COVID, and so I was by myself.
Yeah.
But I started hearing different sounds outside of the room that I was trying to compose in. Like, it was raining a lot in LA that year, and so those felt like new sounds, and I was recording those. And I don't know if it was something about staying home, which made me more in tune with the sounds around me.
Yeah.
There was like a couple from the house next door that I could hear like the muffled versions of their conversations without really understanding what they were talking about, only like the tone of how they were talking to each other. There was like a hum of an electrical wire that I could hear a lot. And so I started recording these things. Was interested in making a piece that was about kind of our relationship to A, like the sounds around us, but also the people around us that we were not interacting with at the time, mostly because, you know, you weren't seeing neighbors really on the street or anything. And this was like kind of the darkest times of COVID.
Getting kind of like into that, the real depths of it there. I totally get it. Myself as a composer and creator, the transition from like an academic world where you're like in this like kind of very oxygenated environment and everybody's like, you know, ideally very supportive and you have like guaranteed performances and like all these things. And then kind of stepping into more of the real world is always a weird transition because you're like, all right, I have to make a living doing this. And which you have like doing like, you know, your film stuff and your stuff more commercially. And then there's always for all of us, I feel like, who have been trained like in some artistic realm, there's always this yearning to have this artistic output or this like extra thing that like, you know, doing anything else, it won't satisfy it. You're always just like looking for that other extra thing going on.
Yeah. And sometimes you can get that from a film. Well, you can get some of that from a film. Like if it's a director that I've worked with before who trusts me, or a director who's particularly interested in having an avant-garde score.
Yeah.
But even then, your inner critic, I think, on film and TV, like, gets silenced a lot because ultimately it's someone else that's making the decision about like what's going to work for their film. Yeah. And your inner critic gets to choose what it presents and if it's good enough to present, but ultimately like is not making the final decision. So the thing I miss most was like that struggle of having to like really decide if like, is this thing finished? Is this thing like worthy of asking other people to spend their time to listen to, or and those types of questions. It was like, I guess, wanting some more control in that sense. But at the same time, this piece was like giving up a lot of control.
reset. Yes, there's no reset.
Talk about like the scoring and like the process that it took to like get this specific piece off and going.
Yeah, so I had all those sounds that I had recorded, and I live in LA, and so I don't have that many neighbors. But I started thinking a lot about what it would be like to be in an apartment building in New York City as all this stuff was happening, or like in any city. And so I imagined that each of the, you know, I think mostly this is a way of procrastinating and like not having to like actually write things down on paper. But I started like imagining a scenario in which each of the musicians represented a different person. And I split them up into different pods. So like in my mind, the two violins represented a couple that was living in a single apartment unit. The viola and the cello represented like another couple, maybe like slightly older. Like if the violins are this young couple, and then the cello represented like probably my grandfather, who was like divorced for most of his life and like living alone and had a deep love for classical music, but was like really living like a solitary existence, which is what I was doing at the time. And so I imagined all of these people hearing the same electrical wire, hearing the same rain, but also hearing the same news, like, which is represented in the score as AM radio, which, if you look at the score at the very beginning before any of the music starts, it says like one of the musicians walks on stage and turns on an AM radio to the local station, local news station of where the performance is being held. And then I wrote different music for each of the pods, and not only did they have different music, but within that they had different phrases that they had to non-verbally communicate about which phrase they were going to play and how many times they were going to play it. So like each couple within each apartment was having a conversation with each other. And then as the piece continues on, they start to have conversations with their neighbors and the people around them. And so depending on how fast they're moving through their phrases, the piece can either be, you know, 5 minutes or hours long. If they're moving at different speeds, there's dissonance between the music, there is harmony. So it's different every time. I think mostly that's determined by like what's on the news. Like they premiered the piece in Florida, and the AM radio was a right-wing kind of Fox News style person talking about voter fraud, and the whole audience was really uncomfortable. And the players seemed uncomfortable and had this kind of angst. And then when they recorded the piece in New York, like the AM radio was like an infomercial for like medical supplies. And the piece had kind of this melancholy to it about illness. And so, it really felt different. And also I think the audience made it feel different. So,
yeah. That's interesting how like a written component of the piece will contextualize it, which I guess maybe is, I guess that's like an expected thing, right? Like, you know, music contextualizes itself, but this kind of brings it to another layer where it's like, it really brings you into like where this piece is being performed and what is happening around while it's being performed and can definitely alter the mood of it because it's inherently like a very ambient, you know, forward piece, you know, it's slowly moving, this like undulating thing. So the context like really can adjust like the perception of it.
Yeah, that's true. I like, even when you were just saying that, I was also imagining like the piece being like its own like living thing, and maybe like as if it's being performed during like a certain time, like maybe the phrases change or like get more, because there's nothing really like aggressive about it. It is kind of like, I think mostly because of the COVID situation, it was capturing this slowness and this repetitive nature of life and the sadness of like all, you know, the loneliness of that existence. But
yeah.
is also exciting for me as the composer, because like not only it's not like the normal experience of like hearing the nuances of people's performance, but it's also like, I don't know, it's almost like seeding some sort of like a letting go of like an artistic ego and being like, okay, well, I didn't actually write this specific thing, so yeah. I can't take credit for it, but I'm still proud of it in a way.
It's interesting. I was talking to another individual about this recently, how I've noticed a trend in performers recently where a lot more performers, I think, are comfortable, or rather they feel empowered to like improvise, or like if you give them the correct instructions or just the right amount of instructions, they feel the autonomy to like go about it, kind of thing. And I don't know if you felt that shift, but I feel like, you know, 10 years ago when I was just starting to like write music, like I knew so little performers in the classical world, at least, that were comfortable right. with that. And recently everyone's like improvising and everyone's become like super comfortable doing that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I wonder, you know, it's also during COVID, like when I was still scoring things for film and TV. And so like, instead of having people come into the studio and record parts on top of, cause I, a lot of my film scores, I produce and record everything myself and just kind of bring in different musicians to layer things on top or sure. play themes or, but everyone during COVID kind of had their own home setup, and it would just be like, I would make something and then send it off, and they would send it back. And the musicians that could improvise on top of what I made, as opposed to having to like read specific parts, are always, it just makes the job as a composer so much easier, because like, A, it's more exciting, and B, not only are you getting something that's like helping with the piece of music that you're sending them, but also then can become like a starting point for something new, because it could be something that you weren't expecting or weren't anticipating, and then kind of spark a new creative idea. So I think film composing in that way is really collaborative.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you start to find musicians who you know, like I can send this thing to you and they can play exactly what I want, but then I can ask them to do a pass of just something crazy that they hear.
Yeah.
And then that becomes more of a conversation than like a you know, some sort of direction.
Yeah. That's totally what it is. And especially in like the whole COVID setting thing, I think a lot of people became more aware of like, oh, like let's make this more of a conversation, because maybe there is a lack of conversation, you know, during that whole time, and people were trying to find any opportunity they could to like connect with another human or, you know, whatever it was. So, I know so many people, that are like classically trained musicians that began to do like improvisation, like a whole series of like small improvisation stuff like during that time, where I was genuinely surprised. I was like, wow, I didn't know that you were interested in this kind of stuff. So,
yeah, I also come from a kind of a jazz background too, so I sure. wonder, like before classical, it's like I think I was just always more comfortable in that space.
Thank you. October was a pretty big month for you. You had two releases of kind of your own volition. So you had Apartments through this ensemble. And then you had a an album released as well. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, definitely. So I think in that last 7 or year period that I was doing most in film and TV that I was speaking about and kind of itching to get back to more concert music, it was like finding the time, finding the headspace, finding the muscle memory was really difficult. And then on one project, I was kind of stuck and decided to go back through all of the like voice memos on my iPhone to see if there was anything interesting in there. Cause kind of like I described on Apartments, like I'm sure like everyone is just like constantly recording different sounds and ideas, whether it's at like a friend's upright piano. And I discovered like a series of like 7 or 8, like fully fledged improvised piano pieces that like, I think 2 were from like my grandma's piano when I was visiting her. 2 were from like an Airbnb piano. And so they all had kind of like a different vibe, but because they were recorded on the iPhone microphone, they all kind of also sounded similar. And I don't know, they just kind of fit together and told like a story of my last couple of years of like, you know, musical travels like to these different pianos. And
sure. Yeah.
But then kind of similar to what we were just describing of like, you know, the improvisations and conversations is I had met this like really amazing engineer named Chris Sorum, who also lives in LA. And I brought those pieces to him and he's like a absolute genius at just like setting up different, you know, tape loops and tape effects and a couple of years ago, I found my senior thesis string quartet, which was like, I guess the first string quartet that I've ever written. And I was listening back to it and there would be moments where I was like completely sucked in and like really proud of it and like remembering what I was trying to express at the time. And then there were other moments where it felt like,
just dialing it in.
Yeah, like I could hear like a student kind of trying to do something that wasn't quite as effective.
Sure. Yeah.
Chris and I printed that original performance onto tape and then literally cut out the sections that I didn't like.
Yeah.
And we did that same process that I just described with the piano record on this string recording.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And it was just like had an immediate impact on me, kind of that thing where like you just know immediately, like, yes, like this is what I'm trying to express as an artist. And this is something that I would love for other people to experience. And yeah. And then that just led to a lot of thinking about like, okay, why am I drawn to this process that we've now done twice? And then right around that time, my grandfather passed away who was a Holocaust survivor. And I was doing a lot of reading about like epigenetics and inherited trauma and how like if a generation goes through trauma, that's literally passed on to the genes of their ancestors and of their descendants. And I don't know, like all of a sudden, like in my mind, I was like, okay, like it's kind of like this process of like taking this old music and then like fucking it up and making it feel like completely different. It's like the original thing is still there, but then it's also like presented in this new context and maybe like obscured in a way that doesn't even feel like it did before.
taking an old piece of music or an old piece of art and then reimagining it and kind of taking it back as your own in a lot of ways, because it's moments that you might not be proud of, but then you're, you know, making it into something that you are and you have the means to do that is, you know, I think that's really powerful and really impactful. And knowing the context a bit more now and remembering what I listened to, you know, it comes across that way, because when I first listened to it, it wasn't like confusion that came about me, but I was like, oh, it's like, it's just a string quartet with some like effects or whatever. And then I listened to it again. I was like, okay, like it's maybe got a bit more body than that. And then, but now the full context of it, it makes sense. You know, there's a lot of cohesion with that whole thing. So,
cool. I'm glad.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, and that's such a cool process that you described. I'm a sound engineer myself as well. And so the whole idea of just like feeding everything through and doing like live mixing of like different effects and stuff like that, that's very cool.
Think it collaboration in classical composition is something that I think that gets overlooked, like whether it's like a conductor interpreting a score or like how the players are interpreting it. But like, I don't know, I keep meeting these like incredibly talented people throughout my career as a film composer, whether it's like a performer or an engineer, and it's like being able to bring them into the process and have that sort of collaboration is like always really exciting for me. And there's so much of composing is like just you're just by yourself in a room.
It's very isolating, or it can be very isolating.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And that's why you get a dog, I guess. but then to be able to bring in people at different points of the process and then like have a true creative collaboration where you're performing something live together, or you're I don't know. It's difficult for me, because on the one hand, like give me a scene from a film and just like send me off on my own and like don't talk to me and don't bother me and just like let me do it by myself. Like I don't even want to like don't even knock on my door. You know, it's like I'm a creature, like a solitary creature in that way. But on the other hand, like finding those moments and people where you speak kind of like the same musical language, and for someone that works by themselves so much, those moments where like you really feel like a collaboration is working, I think are really special.
Totally. And it's you reach this like when you reach a flow state together with like another individual, that's like when the real like shit happens,
which is rare. It feels rare for me, I guess, but like some people access it easier than others.
That's a whole other conversation. But yeah, no, totally. I feel like I've only recently started to kind of get to that point with like a few collaborators of mine when I do like improvisations and stuff. And yeah, it's a different thing, because you'll get through something and like it'll be 45 minutes later when you're out on the other end and you won't even realize it. You know, it's pretty nutty your brain can just like kind of take you in those moments.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I feel like I've had a lot of opportunities to do that in film and, you know, cause like every film is about something different or like takes place in like a different area. So like the way that I've approached that is like, rather than like trying to get different samples of different instruments, and I try to find different people that like authentically represent those things. And so,
yeah. Thank you. Is there anything you want to like plug right now, or things you want people to kind of like look out for?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've talked a lot about the concert music, but my two most recent films that I'm really proud of, and I think, you know, some film and TV projects you do where like they mix the music super quietly, and it's like, why did I even do all that work if no one's going to hear it?
Right.
But these last two films were big, beautiful projects that the directors and the people, the filmmakers, were really wanted music to be an important part, and they were completely different. So one is called Madhu, which is a documentary for Disney that's coming out in the spring about a Nigerian ballet prodigy who gets a scholarship to go learn how to continue his dance education in England. And so that was really exciting because I got to compose a lot of music and work with African musicians and compose music for the dance sequences.
Cool. Yeah.
And so that's a cool thing to look out for. And then the other one's called The Voyage Out, which was like this really trippy, crazy documentary shot on 16mm that follows a group of people trying to hunt for elk with bow and arrow in like the mountains of Idaho and Montana.
Wild.
And that score I produce only using instruments made from animals and then choir and human voice. So it's like drum skin, animal skin drums, ram's horns, like goat nails, and then human voice. And so
that's crazy.
Both really experimental scores, and really proud of that. I think those are going to be good records too when they come out. So yeah, maybe keep an eye out for that stuff. And yeah, it's like there's not always as much of a, like the lines between like the concert music and the films like can be really blurred, I think. And like people like John Corigliano and Johnny Greenwood have done that really well. And those are heroes and role models for me. And
sure,
trying to, you know, can make keep a consistent artistic narrative as much as possible. You know, sometimes it's not because people are asking you to write things that you don't want to write and you got to pay the bills. But
Yeah, for sure, man. We'll keep it up. Yeah. It sounds awesome. I'm enjoying the stuff you're putting out. I'm looking forward to hearing, the music of those two documentaries that you described. It sounds good, man.
Well, yeah, thanks so much for listening and for your interest, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. All right, that is all we have time for today with Jackson's interview. It was a great time chatting with him and learning more about his process and the projects that he has coming up. I think that there's a lot of cool things in the works, so definitely check out those two documentaries if you're able to, and stay on the lookout for any other, you know, concert music that Jackson might be releasing, because I think there's some pretty cool stuff going on here. As always, Relevant Tones is a product of Access Contemporary Music. Please check out more at acmusic.org, and we'll catch you next time. Thanks.